Thank you, Frank. I want to thank Louise and Marty for your contributions already this morning. Your words and the songs that we've sung have already stirred in me things that we could sit with for the coming week, and I thank you both. Thank you, Henry. And Candace was here early putting these flowers up, and I want to thank you, everybody, for contributing here this morning to this service. Brian Stevenson is the author of Just Mercy. He's an attorney. He's a voice for justice. He stated in Just Mercy, "My grandmother was the daughter of people enslaved in the 1800s in Caroline County, Virginia. Her father talked to her all the time about growing up in slavery. That legacy was very much shaped in my grandmother and the way she raised her 9 children. It influenced the way she talked to me, the way she constantly told me this, 'Keep close, Brian.' When I visited her, she would hug me so tightly I could barely breathe. After a little while, she would ask me, 'Brian, do you still feel me hugging you?' If I said yes, she'd let me be. If I said no, she would assault me all over again. I said no a lot because it made me happy to be wrapped in her arms. She never tired of pulling me close. And she would tell me, 'You can't understand most of the important things, Brian, from a distance. You have to go close.'" Our theme for July has been holding on and letting go, going beyond safe places and easy answers. The past 3 Sundays of this month, we've heard from Verna and Elizabeth and Scott. For me, it's been a rich time this month, hearing from them, challenging us to step out, to take risks, to make choices, to hold on and to let go. I thank Verna for putting a lot of this together for the month. And while I'm here with this opportunity, I also want to say a thank you to Melinda and Amanda, as I know this summer you are stepping up, filling in lots of unique ways. I know we all miss Susan. I do. And I'm excited for her to come back soon, as well as Leslie joining us here in the coming weeks. With that said, I'd like to point you to the picture that's been on the front of our bulletin this month. I, like you, perhaps have been drawn to this picture these last few weeks, considering me being the one there walking out on the wire, holding my own wire up, going beyond safe places and easy answers. But today, as we're entering into this time, and as I've been here already this morning, and as we've worshiped together here already, I'm sensing something different, and that is another person out on that wire, someone else that I have forced out on that wire, someone else that's seeking to walk out, forced to take risks, didn't have a choice, due to my complicity and my participation in systemic injustices and inequality all around us in our culture. So when I see that picture today, I see it a little differently. With that said, I'd like us to go close to the story as Frank read for us this morning. Go close to a story that for me has shaped a belief that's worth keeping. A belief that Christ wants to pull us close in order for us to see that his table is a big, big table of welcome. I grew up in a close-knit farm family in Kansas. There I was gifted with much love, many, many good times. But though I sensed God's embrace, and we spoke often around our table about God's deep love for us, many of my formative years in my faith journey had me experiencing limited contact or even awareness of people that had journeys different from mine. Thus, I grew up with a lot of boundaries and assumptions in my faith that if God loved me so deeply, I wondered if his love and welcome were the same for others that were different from me. Pastor and author John Pavlovich says it like this: these false narratives handed down were not the result of targeted, sinister indoctrination by adults around me or delivered through any specific verbal instruction. They were simply the predictable byproduct of being around people who looked and talked and believed the way they did. And when this happens, he said, your table is going to be small. After high school, I went off to Tabor College, and after 3 years there, I took a year off to go abroad. It was at an airport, one day in particular, getting ready to board our flight for me to fly for the first time overseas, that I began to have what I can only describe now as the beginnings of some sort of an awakening in my spirit. I stood in that airport amidst lots of different people, diverse ethnicities, cultures, and languages. And I just started to catch a glimpse and see people different from me, not as ones to be avoided or viewed with suspicion, but rather to see them in a light and a beauty. All others coming and going around me. And in that airport that day, some sort of song started to come alive. It was a song without words, but it was some sort of melody pointing me to this vision of Christ and a big table. It's been a process over the last many years then of letting go of a faith that was formed with boundaries and exclusion, and instead holding up with open hands a belief worth keeping, a sense that we're to be about a song that opens our hearts, our minds, all to the beauty that everyone born has a place at the table. In our story from Luke 7 that we heard just a bit ago, my attention is first and most deeply connected to the woman. A woman in whom we're not given a name. Sadly, this is not all that unusual. Often, we've had stories that we've read and heard that give us life and light and truth and power throughout the Christ story, with women in the center of them, but often without a name. This woman certainly had to have had a name, though the male writers of Scripture didn't always find it in them to honor these women by giving us their names. I want to hold up now this woman to you and celebrate her, that we would see her courage and strength, her determination to go close. Just imagine for a second that evening as she made her way across town, resisting voices surely every step of the way that were telling her to stop and turn back. And then upon entering the home, pushing through what was surely lots of men gathered there, pushing through with each step, calling BS to the misogyny surely palpable throughout that house. And with that, letting go of the lies that limited her, marginalized her and told her she didn't belong there. In doing so, she tells us boldly and courageously again here today, we got to go close. I suppose I love this story, one of my favorites in all of the story, because it's a woman that leads us to Jesus. I guess I feel deeply about this because I have three women in my life, Judy, Landry, and Annika, that have been leading me to a bigger table for years. I have watched them connect with and love on others. I am learning from them. These three women have time and again peeled back layers of false narratives that have been in me. False narratives from a journey in a church that has too often been marked by exclusion, by judgment, by so many traditions of privilege and inequality. So for some time now, my life has been and is being turned upside down by three women. A few days from now, a little bit later this week, Judy and I will be going away for a few days to celebrate our 25th anniversary. I mentioned a minute ago that awakening experience in the airport. That all came about because of Judy. 26 years ago, she invited me to take a year off from school and join her amongst a group of young adults going to Germany. Now, I could tell you that upon getting that invitation, I really committed her invitation to prayer and sought the hand of God leading me. I could say that, but it would not be true. The truth is, I wanted to just run after Judy. I had made up in my mind, wherever Judy goes, I will go. And where she stays, I will stay. And her people will be my people. That year's experience had us back and marrying some months later. In the 25 years that have followed, she has again and again encouraged me to go close. In the coming and going here and there around the world these last many years, it's meant living at a distance from our biological family, but at the same time, going close and tasting this richness and indescribable beauty that we are a part of God's global family, and that everyone born has a place at the table. As Judy and I have been on this journey, our way has been enhanced with two travel companions, both of them also women. 6 of their earliest years were spent with us living in Kosovo in the former Yugoslavia. A business with a vision for bringing economic development and new life to the people of that region became our focus. That business has steadily grown, providing employment now for 7 local staff and their families, as well as income for hundreds of individuals and families. It's the first center in that country to process, bottle, and sell local farmers' milk. The European Union has been taking notice the past few years and recently awarded us a 350,000 euro grant to expand our processing line and create new avenues to go close. I point to the courage and resiliency of these two young women. Children then, now young ladies, that entered into a culture strictly Muslim, requiring them to adjust to all sorts of new things. New ways of doing daily life, different styles of learning in school, all in a language different from their own. And as they did, they thrived with a vision of a bigger table. Like the woman here in our story, The fierce love and courage of these two young ladies has overwhelmed my heart with hope in these recent months. Our young people are giving me hope. They are rising up for justice, for compassion, and for speaking truth to power. While I and perhaps you share the holding of a very deep tension and pain over these last 18 months, I'm also encouraged and hold up with much hope our young people who are going to lead us forward with an insistence on decency and goodness and dignity and equality. We also see another person in our story here, Simon, the Pharisee. He's the owner of the house. He is given a name. We're told as the woman went close to Jesus, Simon couldn't find it in him to welcome her. His table was small and exclusive. Simon kept his distance rather than going close, thinking to himself, surely Jesus was aware this woman just didn't belong here. And Jesus hears his thoughts and responds. He introduces the Pharisee to a bigger table and boldly challenges him to let go of his small table of exclusion and judgment, arrogance and discrimination. Perhaps you heard or read just this last week Barack Obama's words from his Nelson Mandela lecture in Johannesburg, South Africa. These words, ironically, came just hours apart from the meeting in Helsinki for President Trump and Vladimir Putin. The differences between the two events could not be more staggering. One focused on the reality of us being at a crossroads in our country, in our world, and asked the question if we're ready to rise up for equality, dignity, solidarity, and kindness. The other event focused on fear, exclusion, supremacy, and threats. I'll leave it up to you to guess which event focused on what. Privilege and the ways of patriarchy and oppression are alive and well. It's our history, and it continues to stir among us. Oppression and the darkness of racism have continued to bring hatred and division. We gotta go close. And finally, in our story, we see Jesus. Jesus going close. First of all, he's at a Pharisee's home. That in and of itself boggles my mind. What's he doing there? It speaks to his unending love and compassion. And then in walks this woman, shunned by all, but with Jesus, she finds that she belongs. More than ever in our history, I hold Jesus' words and actions here in this story as critical for us. A marginalized individual comes forth and finds welcome. One casts judgment and pride and arrogance and is boldly confronted, but we're not even told he is banished from the table. In going close to Christ in the bigger table, we find welcome. Not fear, but love. Not inferiority, but equality. Not resentment, but reconciliation. Not isolation, but connection. Not a spirit of hostility, but the spirit of radical hospitality. As Brian's grandmother said, to understand, you can't remain at a distance. You have to go close. So in closing, I take you once more to an airport. We're going to be heading there in a few days, and I have to tell you, the airport is one of my favorite places to go. These words are the words of poet Naomi Shihab Nye. born to a Palestinian father and American mother. She says, wandering around the Albuquerque airport terminal, after learning my flight had been detained 4 hours, I heard an announcement. If anyone in the vicinity of gate 4A understands any Arabic, please come to the gate immediately. Well, one pauses these days. Gate 4A was my gate. I went there. An older woman in full traditional Palestinian embroidered dress, just like my grandmother wore, was crumpled on the floor, wailing loudly. Help, said the flight service person. Talk to her. What is her problem? We told her the flight was going to be late, and she did this. I stooped. I would add, I went close and put my arm around the woman and spoke to her. Shudawa shudbid uk habibti. Stani shwe midfadlik. Shubit sewi. The second she heard any words she knew, however poorly used, she stopped crying. She thought the flight had been canceled entirely. She needed to be in El Paso for major medical treatment the next day. I said, you're fine. You're going to get there. Who's picking you up? Let's give him a call. So we called her son, and I spoke with him in English. I told him I would stay with his mother till we got on the plane, and then I would ride next to her. She talked to him then. Then we called her other sons just for fun. Then we called my dad, and he spoke with her for a while in Arabic and found out, wouldn't you know, they had 10 shared friends. Then I thought, just for the heck of it, why not call some Palestinian poets I know and let them chat with her? This all took up about 2 hours. By then, she was laughing a lot, talking about her life, patting my knee, answering questions. She then pulled out a sack of homemade mamul cookies, little powdered, sugary, crumbly mounds stuffed with dates and nuts, and began offering them to all the women at the gate. To my amazement, not one single woman declined it. It was a sacrament. The traveler from Argentina, the mom from California, the lovely woman from Laredo, we were all covered with the same powdered sugar. And we were smiling. Then the airline broke out free beverages from huge coolers, and two little girls ran all around that gate, serving us all apple juice, as they too were covered in powdered sugar. And I noticed my new best friend. By now we were holding hands. She had a potted plant poking out of her bag, some medicinal thing with green furry leaves. An old country traveling tradition. Always carry a plant, always stay rooted to somewhere. And I looked around that gate of late and weary ones and I thought, this is the world I want to live in. The shared world. Not a single person at this gate, once the confusion and the crying stopped, not one was apprehensive about the other. They took the cookies. This can still happen anywhere. Holding on and letting go, a belief worth keeping. Let's let go of our small tables that divide and go close to the Christ table where there's room for everyone. I want to invite Marty to come forward. And I'm going to suggest that as we end this time, we do so corporately in song. If you would pull out your bulletin, there's an insert included. I was introduced to this song at the worship weekend at Laurelville a couple of years ago. I want to invite us to stand and join together, voicing our thanks to God first that all of us have a place at the table. And then let's also sing, declaring we're going to be people about goodness and equality. And as we find ourselves at these crossroads where we are today, we're going to be creators of justice and joy, compassion and peace.